Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel. Joining me in studio, Gigi Belser. How are you, Gigi?
I'm great, Jen. How are you?
Well, thanks for coming back. We had a conversation here on the podcast. For those who got to tune in, Gigi is a healer, quantum pathic, Reiki master, intuitive, all sorts of holographic patterning. But really, truly, we taught I facilitated, you taught a class at the Well North Shore recently, and a bunch of very enthusiastic people showed up with a deep desire to go, you know, into this work and to help raise the vibration of what is going on right now. So I felt it was really important that we have another follow-up conversation, because you can only tap into so much in a 45-minute chat and then at the Well for a couple of hours. But what can we do for our listeners, right? The people that subscribe to this podcast and those that they pass this along to. This is a really critical time in our spiritual growth as a world, a global power, right? On Earth. What can we do to help with this situation? Is it so macro that we can't go micro? Or are there things that we can do on a microscopic level to really make a difference?
I think that's a great question, and we are in what I would characterize as a deep spiritual war mm-hmm. in the inner worlds that's, at this point in time, I think will determine the future of this planet. And it's incumbent on everybody to wake up. I think time has run out for taking the process of 5 to 10 years in a leisurely manner to say, I have time to do my personal work. Mm-hmm. I think that personal work has to be done now, and it has to be accelerated. So a couple of people have issued warnings in the last few weeks, one being Eckhart Tolle, that mm-hmm. there is no time to wake up. The time is now.
Yes, power of now, for anyone who's not familiar with that work.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Tom Kenyon came out through his channeling of the Hathor saying the same thing, that it's possible that we're looking at a sixth extinction event. And we all can know this, that we've been paying attention to the news, what's happening to the animal kingdom, what's happening to our oceans, what's happening to our planet, that we're still choosing to lay missiles on other countries. And that devastation of population is sort of, it's backward in time, mm-hmm. and we need to move to the present in a spiritual sense, where we are talking about community rather than division.
Right,
that is going on so many levels, from race to gender to da 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 da, and in a sense, it's almost inexcusable.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the word community, because a lot of people, especially current administration, is sort of. There's a lot of polarities happening, right, with discussions. But also, as well, I know something that's very important in your work is putting up boundaries, right, for anything that's not serving. So any negative energies, or, you know, if people are not at your vibration, or if somebody's trying to bring you down, or even literally trying to attack you psychically, physically, whatever it might be, we have to put up a boundary. How can we be in community when there are so many dark forces trying to take down, I guess no better way to put it, the light?
Well, that's why we're in this huge spiritual war. So mm-hmm. at one point, the planet was almost subsumed by the darkness. And in 2005, I realized that we'd come into a grace period. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure yet if that grace period is ending. It could be. So the darkness manifests in the inner worlds in any number of ways. And putting up boundaries means that we put in a form of personal protection. And it takes individuals who have been trained in this in the way that I have and others have been to teach others how to do this. So it's a matter of maintaining your personal frequency at a certain level. Mm-hmm. And how you do that is basically, in many ways, how you live your life, your thought patterns, and building personal armor. In a sense, it's an inner world material to protect yourself from the astrals and the attachments and the implants on planet and off planet that can happen to every human being.
Right. So when you talk about thought patterns, this just popped up as a recent example. Somebody is using Facebook as their microphone, right, to complain about a colleague that they think was, you know, talking smack about them or something. And it reminded me of the four agreements, you know, always do your best, never assume, you know, be impeccable with your word. And the being impeccable with your word, the vibration of gossip is absolutely toxic. It can be cancerous. And I've seen it destroy workplaces. We've seen it destroy communities. We see it all the time, destroying belief systems. It's unbelievable, that vibration. And just that alone, for anybody who's listening, if you find yourself tangling in an assumption, and giving it energy, breathing it, giving it life, then passing it on to someone else, then you make it matter, literally making it have physical matter, which makes it weigh something, right? Weight, matter. So by continuing that vibration of something that is not steeped in fact, and by that I mean you got it from the horse's mouth, and you saw in their eyes whether they were speaking truth or not, to assume something. So just even that could make a difference from the micro level helping macro, couldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So you're not operating in integrity, first of all, when you do that. Mm-hmm. Speaking about another, words matter.
Right.
And they're actually putting a hex on you. So that's real. Mm-hmm. And then that hex needs to be removed. And I don't think people realize that karma today is instant. It mm-hmm. no longer is lifetime after lifetime for karma to be worked out. It's in the moment. Mm-hmm. It's moved very quickly. And so it's the world has become full of that. And it's astonishing, really, that people take license with feeling free to obfuscate the truth mm-hmm. and not be direct. I encourage people, particularly clients, to level with their partners mm-hmm. and to say, this is what's going on, or this happened in my past, it's affecting me today, I'm not able to effectively deal with it, and it's affecting our relationship, and I want you to know. Mm-hmm. Or, in our relationship, this is happening, and I'm not being fed, and what can we do?
Right.
Or, is that relationship done? You know, 13 years is the end of karma, and often relationships will end at that point in time, because you've completed your karma as a couple.
13 years? Right. That's how long I was married.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I know. Well, wow.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm happy to say that I'm very good friends with my ex, and we continue to co-parent our child, so our contract will not be over until, you know, we are parents for life.
Sure, sure. You have that contract to your mm-hmm. child, and then there are threads mm-hmm. within that karmic relationship that can be cleaned up and tidied up so that you're not repeating mm-hmm. soul patterns, soul threads.
So let's talk about that, repeating soul patterns and soul threads. If somebody activates something inside you that really upsets you, chances are you have done this dance before. This is another lifetime playing out, and it's happening, you know, according to quantum physics, simultaneously. I mean, there mm-hmm. there's proof of, what is it, 11 different universes, or rather dimensions, 11 different dimensions happening. That's just what we know of, right? That's proven scientifically, but there's probably way more than that. So that means multiversions of existence smatter at one time, and I like to explain this to people where this makes their brain hurt, as if the universe were separated by shower curtains, right? All these dimensions were separated by shower curtains and happening at once, smattering across. Is that is there a better way that you explain it?
I think that's an excellent way to put it.
Okay.
So then from your master soul, you may have threads going into each of these dimensions that mm-hmm. are a manifestation of your soul, master soul.
Mm-hmm.
And which would explain, interestingly enough, I was having this conversation this morning about your energy being in different universe realities mm-hmm. in different manifestations.
Okay.
So they in my manifestation, in your manifestation, Jen, in this lifetime, you could be holding multiple threads from your master soul that are also present in those other universes. It gets very, very complicated.
Sure.
So when one is clearing an energetic stream, I see it, the stream going long in time, and then as I'm clearing past lives, which now can be multiple past lives all at once. It doesn't have to be one per session, which is just, you know, excruciatingly, painfully slow.
Mm-hmm.
You can be clearing hundreds at a time, and they walk along the timeline and I see them in my inner eyes, burst of light, and mm-hmm. all the emotions are removed from that lifetime. The lifetime still exists, mm-hmm. but the emotions aren't affecting the now.
Got it. And let's talk about in the now. Sometimes there are some practitioners that believe that cutting a cord can help you move on, can end the karma. If you feel this tie, you know, there's this back and forth, there's this dance, there's a pain, they cause a, you know, a sharp pain in your gut or sadness or whatever it might be. So let's just cut the cord. But sometimes maybe that karma needs to happen and keep playing out until you're really, really done with it. How does one person know if their karma can be where you really need to pull the root out and just, it might hurt for a second, but then it's the right thing to do, or when you just have to let these things slowly die and disintegrate on their own?
I wouldn't necessarily associate that with karma.
Okay.
So cords, we can cord to another that's mm-hmm. significant to us. The only place that we should cord is heart chakra.
Right.
So most people cord also in second home, family, sex.
Second chakra.
Mm-hmm. Or they may cord in third, which is personal power, trying to take your personal power. Mm-hmm. Or they may cord in your throat. They want to take your ability to speak, mm-hmm. your mm-hmm. voice. I don't think I've ever experienced it in seventh or really sixth.
Okay.
So what a practitioner can do is cut that cord with the client and then roll it back to the person who's throwing it out or the person that you've been in relationship with. And those cords can grow as big as tree trunks.
Mm-hmm.
So when you cut them back and roll them back, that person will also be affected. So you do it gently
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, you're not slamming them. And then that frees your energy body up to complete more fully because that relationship has been completed and or mm-hmm. they or a family member is cording into inappropriate cords.
Mm.
At any point in time, those should be cut.
Okay. Inappropriate cords being just
second, third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything
fifth,
that's
sixth.
Not the heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
But then how can somebody know? Like there's not a drive through where we can go, oh, sorry, unnecessary attachments in your second and third chakra. You know, how do people get so tuned in? What can they do? Other than meditation and other than see practitioners such as yourself or people that you recommend, you know, how can people sort of, what are some signs that they can look for to know that this might be happening and preventing them from their real success?
One of the things I really encourage my clients to do is to do their own work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them coming back for the same old stuff all the time
right.
or being dependent. So
right.
you can go into meditation and then ask your high self team to show you a cording that's inappropriate
mm-hmm.
and ask for that information to come in, then you simply cut it
mm-hmm.
and imagine it being cut, imagining it rolling back to that individual and with the command that you will not record to me,
mm-hmm.
especially if that relationship is complete.
Right.
And it's done with love. I mean, you're not trying to slam your ex.
Right.
You're trying to clean up your aura field and your connections that you had as a couple, and most often there is inappropriate cording throughout the relationship,
or a friendship even. I mean,
yeah,
I've noticed too that since I am no longer with the Chicago Tribune and now working independently and doing stories that I'm very passionate about, there are some people that are no longer reaching out to me just because of that.
Right.
No longer having that job title under my name.
Sure.
So you're seeing somebody for what they truly are, which is apparently very
illuminating.
Right. Wow. You know, but that's good because it helps you clean house and you can
sure.
see who's really there with you for the right reasons, you know. And, you know, if there's one thing that my dad was wonderful about teaching me is that it doesn't matter if you're the bartender at Billy Goat or the CEO of Vienna Beef, you're all welcome in his house. And if you have a heart that is healing and wanting to communicate, you know, who's to say one is better than the other? We all put our, you know, pants on one leg at a time. And Jesus was a carpenter, okay? He wasn't the CEO of Google. So if we could just understand, going back to that heart relationship, that title is something we give ourselves and we don't leave here with a title. We don't get to the other side with our resume attached to our ass. I mean, there is a vibration that comes with us. And I think if more people could understand that, that their vibration carries with them where they go, not their resume, not their LinkedIn page. We could really get a lot further. And that's the part where I wish people would get more macro and get out of their micro. But then we have to fix the micro to be able to help on a broader sense. So it's this really difficult dance right now, Gigi. And I think a lot of people would rather just stay home and watch Netflix. I mean, it's hard unless you are forced, like we were in the war, right? When, you know, and I wasn't alive during World War II, but you are absolutely forced to go here, work here, make this machinery, you know, sew these clothes. I mean, we don't have that kind of urgency now. But we may.
It may be coming. And
okay.
It probably is.
Yeah.
So to that comment, I think it's a critically important, and thank you, Dad, to understand and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Really, unless I'm perceiving somebody with exceptionally dark energy, always feel that I don't know who they are in their energetic stream, and they could be exceptionally powerful.
Right.
But they've made a different choice this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be choosing to be at the checkout counter. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who that person is in their stream and who they've been.
Right.
It could be amazing.
Right.
So I never underestimate who I am interfacing with.
Correct. Ever.
Ever.
You never know.
No, you don't.
You're going to be discussing on May 20th at the Well, the fourth turning, which is a big shift that's happening now. Explain to the listener what that term means.
The fourth turning is a seminal book by Strauss and Howe, and it's probably one of the more important books that have been written in this timeline. They went back in time first to determine is time lineal or cyclical,
mm-hmm.
and repeating patterns. And they went back to the 1500s and determined through their work that every 100 years is a seculum, and within those 100 years, there are four turnings of
mm-hmm.
20 years each.
Mm-hmm.
First, second, third, and fourth. Each turning holds particular archetypes within each generational structure within that particular turn.
Okay.
We are in the eighth year of the fourth turn, so we've got 12 years to go. The fourth turn is the unraveling, and everything comes apart.
Mm-hmm.
And people are feeling that now because we're in it.
Yep.
So it's everywhere, and it affects everything.
Right.
So the fourth turning really lays out these archetypes for this particular time, and then how to prepare for what's likely coming in the next 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then our leadership, what they look for in each of these fourth turnings is the gray champion. And when we see the gray champion, it's sort of a heads up of, oh, no, here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
And so
this is sort of like the catalyst that takes things to the next level.
It's the unraveling.
Yeah.
That leader has to appear for the unraveling to complete itself. And it appears that that gray champion is being serviced now by three leaders of three countries,
okay.
The presidents of the United States, the leadership of Russia, and the leadership of China.
Got it.
So while people are having visceral reactions to the leadership in the U.S., it requires stepping back and viewing history and viewing, because history repeats,
mm-hmm.
the nature of the fourth turn, the nature of this particular disruptor, and what is coming to the surface. So what we're watching coming to the surface is enormous shadow that's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the spiritual war.
Mm-hmm.
That shadow has to come up and manifest in order for light to extinguish it. It's the only way it really works.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as all those shadows remain below the sewers, below the planet line, and can't be seen, this will continue to go on. The planet can't sustain it. Population can't sustain it.
Right.
And this particular fourth turn is a huge one. And so it's why I say we're at checkpoint,
mm-hmm.
why people have to wake up.
Work up would work as well.
Yeah, yeah,
it's going to take some work to wake up.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So I can just would read to you two quick. This book is just chock full of so much amazing, fabulous information. Mm-hmm. But this particular is chapter is from Great Champions. At each of these great gates of history, 80 to 100 years apart, a similar generational drama unfolded. Four archetypes aligned in the same order, elder prophet, midlife nomad, young adult hero, child artist, together produced the most enduring legends in our history. Each time the great champion appeared marked the arrival of a moment of darkness and adversity and peril, the climax of the fourth turning of the seculum.
Hmm. So the last time this happened, give me an example of, oh wait, go ahead, read what you're going to read, and then I want to ask you to you know, help me outline.
Think of all the boomers, 13ers, mm-hmm. millennials you know about today. Picture them intended to 30 years older, pushing the archetypal paths of ancestral generations during fourth turnings. This will be America's next crisis constellation, capable of preparing America into and through the next gate of history.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this opportunity now, and the millennials are the key generation. And interestingly, they are larger than the baby boomers in population, larger than Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to be the ones who say, we work in community.
Hmm.
Their archetype is very, very different. And we haven't seen this in a long time.
We were having a discussion about this and how the giant mansions are going to be a thing of the past.
Yep.
Unless there are a bunch of millennials that are just sharing them like a hotel.
And they may be.
And they may be. You really think that's going to happen?
Well, I think there's going to be some of that on that's going to present on very interesting levels mm-hmm. about how that space is occupied, because the millennials, you know, they really don't care if you present as male or female. Mm-hmm. They're all in like this group experience mm-hmm. and they're not interested necessarily in owning homes. They don't want material things. Mm-hmm. You can't offer that to them, and they'll even say yes.
Right.
So it's a very different motivation, and businesses are trying to figure out how to figure them out.
True.
Because, you know, for their perspective, they're the next buying segment, but they're not going to be the next buying segment. They're going to be the ones that say, okay, what can we do? We're looking at what you left us, baby boomers, and we're not appreciating it.
Right.
And so how can we then turn and save this planet? How can we create whatever to make these changes, to dissolve the plastic in the oceans? Those mm-hmm. those inventions are already starting, thankfully, to come through.
And what about our water? I'm terrified about what's going on with water globally. We are just so taking advantage of the fact that we can go turn on the filtered water, but it could be a really huge issue, especially with all the plastic and everything that's going on. Are the millennials going to fix that too?
Well, I think probably they'll come up with devices, and they already are. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've got two places, Alaska and South Africa, that water is drying up. Mm-hmm. I mean, South Africa, they may already be out. There's a wonderful site called thebigwobble.com that addresses what's going on in a planetary experience.
The
Big Wobble.
The Big Wobble. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Uh-huh. And Alaska is now running in, certain parts of Alaska is now running into problems about even having water. Mm. Now, we're not talking having potable water. We're talking about having water.
Right.
Period. So that's a huge problem. And, you know, in the Great Lakes here, we're selling some of our water. And it's like, why? What are you doing, guys?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going to need it. So I think we all need to start being exceptionally responsible about how we use what we use and how we buy product.
Okay. And so with that in mind, with the concern of what might be bubbling, sort of like this zit that's being popped, it's mm-hmm. kind of this mm-hmm. terrible analogy, but people can understand that. You have to get it out, and then you can clean the wound and use the hydrogen peroxide, make sure it's all up and out, and then the healing can begin. We're only 8 years into the 20-year cycle of this fourth turn.
Right.
So for those who are in complaint and, you know, promoting this, I would say, polarization, recent tweets with Kanye West is showing this, that he's, you know, speaking out about. It's just fascinating to me that for somebody to say that they agree to get out of victim and hate and into love is going to make him look like a, you know, a Trump-loving Republican that doesn't believe in black power. Like, what on earth is going on here? But people will believe exactly what fragment they want to believe to hold on to their belief system and keep their hate alive.
And it also could be that he's being villainized inappropriately. Mm-hmm. I looked at that statement he made, that tweet, those six words are apparently setting the world on fire right now with Candace Owen. Mm-hmm. And I happen to believe she's correct.
And what did Candace Owen say exactly for the listeners who weren't familiar with what happened with the tweet? I don't have her tweet up in front of me, but it was a comment about...
Well, I can't quote it exactly either, but she basically said that the black community is living in victim...
Right.
Hood and that,
replaying the victim role.
Right, mm-hmm. And that this needs to stop. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot...
And she's African-American.
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of credence to that. That was started, back in the 60s when you realize that now 50% of all Americans receive some sort of outlay in dollars from the U.S. government. And that she's speaking to a different... dynamic within that community, and it's not just that community. It's every community I've been shown has its own vibrational ring of possible victimhood, and each community, the gay community, whatever community,
the Native American community, the Jewish community, whatever it is that feels that there was a tragedy on their community,
needs to pull out of it.
Right.
And otherwise they're living in that ring, and that ring needs to be broken. And so I think these two players could be really starting something significant that will have roles that would be very unexpected.
Well, it's like the difference between the Black Panthers and Martin Luther King. You know, Martin Luther King saying we're going to stand without weapons and love, and the other, side using force, and we're going to fight for our freedom and kill. You know, you can stand up for what you believe in without having to kill for it. You can represent justice like a Nelson Mandela or a Gandhi or a Martin Luther King without being physically forceful about it.
Mm-hmm. She's criticizing Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
And we discussed that briefly last time, the women's movement, Me Too movement. I think all these movements are self-defeating in a way. And I know that's a very contrarian view, but I think people believe they're coming together to make a difference. And I think what they've done is create a vibrational ring that they really don't want to be in.
So how can they get up and out of that to rise above? How can we make this Me Too to our advantage? As you say, if this current administration is bringing forth an uprising, right? Bringing forth an archetype of this,
shadow.
How can we then make this to our advantage instead of keeping us in a ring where we're stuck?
Well, I think it's, as Kanye West is saying, I just took the red pill. And and one good way to contextualize it is blue pill, red pill. Mm-hmm. And so the blue pill is that life is wonderful in this program and that we're just doing everything that we normally do.
Right.
Go to our job, come home, make dinner, go to bed, da-da-da-da-da. And the red pill is seeing the universe in a very, very different way.
Actually, and you're not meaning like red, like red states, Republican.
No, absolutely
red not. I think some people are misunderstanding what the red pill is.
It's from the movie The Matrix.
Yep.
Where, they were living, obviously, below the blue pill world of the computer program, and they were living in a destroyed world, actually coming in and trying to save the world.
Right.
And they had all taken literally the red pill and woke up. Mm. And that's a very rude awakening.
Yeah.
It can be traumatic, and it can require some assistance going through that awakening because it's a deep inner process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Often requires help. It's sort of like a Kundalini awakening, requires help. It's a good thing not to do alone.
Right. Like ayahuasca. Don't do it unless you're with a really, what is it?
The capable shaman.
I was going to say, or they're like not approved, but you know what I'm saying? Certified?
Well, that
has been compromised, that experience.
Yes, it has. Unfortunately, it's got to be a social experience. But and some people like in Peru, like Bernard Gunther, are not taking ayahuasca anymore or encouraging it. Because it's become so social, and shamans are even misusing it, which is so too bad. Mm-hmm. ayahuasca grandmother snake is a very deep experience. She always knows where you are, and she's tracking, and she cuts through those ego states. So,
and what happens? You've gone and you've done these journeys, as they say. You have to clean yourself to the point where you're, you know, healthy eating and living, if not 3 weeks, 4 weeks before you go on the journey, or is it 30 days?
Oh, it's at least 6 weeks.
Okay, and 6 weeks of clean living, so your container is completely ready for it. And then what else happens?
Well, then when, to describe an actual journey?
Yeah.
So when I did it, there were, say, 40 of us at a time, and we were in a great room with a fire burning. So you learn pretty quickly to bring your own sleeping bag, because I could take you down to freezing cold to facilitate healing during that process. So by one, you go up to the shaman. He has created the ayahuasca.
Which is a drink, an herb?
It's a drink.
Okay, got it.
And so he's made it over the course of, say, 10 days. He's brought the plant out from the forest and boiled it down to this liquid. And you ingest the liquid. It's quite bitter. Go back to your space and wait for it to kick in. And when it kicks in, it takes about 40 minutes. And when it kicks in, it kicks in. So you're having amazing visions shooting at you constantly. And then she takes you where you need to personally go, and what she's doing is dissolving ego constructs. And so when I did my journeys, they're amazing and stunning, and you see...
How long does each journey last?
8 hours.
Okay.
And then when you come out, you're out.
Right.
You're purging during the night, and all the shadow... In your, not all the shadow, but
I mean,
each
are
journey.
People crying and thrashing? No. And no, it's just all internal quiet work.
Yes.
Okay.
Very respectful, because it takes courage to do ayahuasca. So everybody there from around the world is very respectful of everybody else in the room. And if anybody needs assistance, they get it on whatever level. And then when you're out, you basically spend the next day alone before the next journey that night, which is a deeper experience. So
even deeper?
Even deeper.
Does that mean it's a 12-hour deal, or you're still at 8 hours?
No, it's just she takes you deeper. I mean, the first one was sort of light, and when we had the group meet up to discuss them the next afternoon, I said, well, gosh, that was really easy. She healed... all my connective tissue that I've been having issues with, and I saw these beautiful electrical lines come in, and I realized what she was doing, and I was going, oh, cool. But I made the mistake of saying to the shaman, wow, that was so easy. I'd like to go deeper.
Whoops.
Whoops. That was a big whoops.
Right? So you got the AP class next.
Yes, I did. So the next night it starts, and I'm going down this highway, this asphalt highway in a beautiful forest. It could be in the Northwest. And suddenly the earth opens up, and I am falling down a black hole as far as you can go.
Crap.
And then I land, and all these faces come shooting at me. A lot of people I know, some family members. And I'm realizing that I'm in the hell world, and almost everybody I know is there with me. So I ask, am I here? Is this where I live? And the answer was no. And I went, wow, okay. That was truly fascinating.
Just visiting.
Yeah, right. Hopefully so.
Yeah.
But I made the mistake of staying too long because I was so fascinated by the whole experience, and a gate closed behind me. You have to get out before the gate closes. So I had to work with my own mentor afterwards, and she said to me, Gigi, I cannot come behind your veil. You've got to get yourself out. Self-responsibility. And I went, okay. So I brought myself up and came in the middle of a moonlight in the inner worlds and a lake, and looked around and went, wow, where am I? And she was guiding me through at this point, because I was voicing back what my experience was. And then she said, well, you have a shaman aspect. We're going to clean up some of those aspects that need, those threads that need to be cleaned from that lifetime that's coming up now. And you're out. So, you know, the other various journeys were even deeper. At the end of that, I would suggest that my ego was totally reconstructed.
Wow. And I would assume that all those who were on the same journey had similar kind of enlightening, deconstructing, rebuilding.
Yes, that was the point.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
Yeah.
So for those people that just think they're going to go have a nice shroom trip and laugh and see some pretty colors, don't even go there. Yeah.
Not unless you're willing to venture into this ego deconstruct. So part of personal work, well, personal work is deconstructing the ego, because the ego will fight for its life no matter what.
Sure.
And so it's moving out of that construct into the construct of the greater mind and trying to marry with that in oneness.
Right.
Really.
So you recently said to me something about changing your perception of oneness. Do you still think we are all one? Even the light, the dark, the polarity? I know there's inner worlds and there's outer worlds, but what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a two-pronged answer.
Okay.
So in the higher dimensions, we can certainly say that we're all one. On this planet, not so much. So the thing is that we each come in with individual energy streams from soul inception to now.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. So we're not equal on that footing. Some people have chosen to mostly bypass their personal work and not commit to it. And others have. So, and then there's the concept of walk-ins, really, on one level, or, as Dolores Cannon puts it in her book, the three waves of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So because we live in free will, and Source has determined that this is a free will universe, and Source is not going to compromise that setup, there needed to be a solution to assisting humankind at this point in time.
Right.
So Source decided to gather volunteers throughout the universe who would incarnate as humans with a higher knowledge base, more advanced knowledge base, to come in to assist. So those people have crossed, as Carolyn Mace would say, the river of forgetfulness, so they also need to wake up to who they are and be present to what they have to share and have that knowledge, be it in forward times or in their present time when they volunteered to come in, to awaken to that information and utilize it for now.
There is a show called Outlander. Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
So I've been binge watching this. A lot of people told me that I needed to check it out. And I'm like, well, I had got through the Tudors. I was so totally obsessed with the whole King Henry era. And so I thought, oh, gosh, I don't know if I want to get hooked on another show that's going to take me somewhere in a deep dive. And, oh, my gosh, it's incredible. And the concept is, this was a book series that they made into a TV series. And I believe it was on Starz originally or something. It's on Starz now. So the woman, Claire, is a nurse in World War II, and World War II ends, and she and her husband, who's a historian, who's kind of doing a lot of family tree lineage history about his family back to the 1700s in Scotland, they've decided to take another honeymoon after the war ended, because it was so traumatic, let's go reconnect. And they go into this very ancient city in Scotland with a lot of, ghost stories and history about what they used to do with the ceremonies and the stones. And there's some, I guess you'd say, rumors about time travel and ghosts and all these interesting sort of inner world, outer world stuff. So Claire goes up to the stones and finds herself putting her hand on the stone, and poosh, she goes to 1735. And all of a sudden, it's just a really fascinating. So then, of course, she's getting adjusted to the fact that she's no longer in 1945. And so now she takes her knowledge as a nurse, to become a healer. But then she's accused of being a witch because she's taking all these herbs and using them to heal. And, you get the gist. But there, she runs into another woman who is kind of onto her.
Yeah.
And it turns out this other woman had traveled from 1968, and they know by the smallpox vaccine scar on her arm, And so it brood all of these incredible thoughts about time travel and is everything that I look around and see really what I'm seeing? You know, you just kind of wonder. You have these connections with people. It happens so fast. You don't know why. You know, she has this disdain for this person. It turns out it's an ancestor of her husband from 1945. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Do you think that's happening? Are we time traveling? Are we crossing all these different planes and having these different? And as I was watching this too, Gigi, I was thinking, why am I resonating so much with this woman's journey of trying to be a healer to basically take these people 200 years ahead to where they're ready to go? Because she wants to help. Now she has this knowledge. She knows the Jacobites are going to get destroyed. And, you know, all of these things that they are trying to fight for isn't going to work. So she's telling them to plant potatoes so they don't have the, you know, the potato famine. And is that happening? Are we having people from the future coming to help us, guide us through this time right now, from 2 years from now?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So a couple of interesting experiences. 1 week I had every client download their future lifetime of that information into the now to a person. And that was so interesting. And then it was done, and then it didn't need to be done anymore. So that can happen. And of course, we can go into different timelines. There's no question that that's true. And
have you met anyone who has, and have you ever?
Well, I was just about to say that based on the emanations, I understand that I have. I've been told, because I wouldn't necessarily recognize that myself, that those emanations are future timelines and off planet for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that information is being brought into the now,
mm-hmm.
In order to exercise those healings through with clients and through chats like this. So, yes, absolutely, of course.
Okay. So for the people that are, sometimes a lot of this knowledge can be overwhelming, right? You talk about walk-ins and time travel and the fourth turning. And after a while, I get it. I get why people want to just sit down with a bag of Chips Ahoy and binge watch, you know, The Real Housewives, because it's just hard. You know, it's like when I knew the ACTs were coming, I blew it off to audition for the play. So what can we do to not get overwhelmed and to know that we are making a difference just tomorrow or even just starting today? If somebody's driving in their car and they're like, okay, that sounds like way too much work. I'm not going to be doing ayahuasca anytime soon, and I sure as heck don't think I'm time traveling. What can I do before dinner?
Send a flower to everybody's heart.
Oh.
As you walk down the street, put a flower, put a rose in their heart.
Picture a rose in their heart.
Yeah, and it works.
Wow.
You put a rose in everybody's heart you walk by, and then watch what happens. I've done it.
Mm.
It's really interesting. That's all we have to do. Be present to who you are, mm-hmm. and do what you can. I mean, it's my journey. Mm-hmm. I'm given to it. Not everybody is.
Yep.
And, you know, you're talking to mothers that are overwhelmed raising 3-4 kids, and, you know, they don't have time. They barely have time to read a book.
Right.
You know, get a chapter down through a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So in that response, the answer is, what can you do? That's what you can do.
That's absolutely right.
You know, I have a different contract.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that contract commands that I be able to expand my container to hold this kind of information, mm-hmm. and have a love of history to realize the importance, say, of the fourth turning, so that people appreciate. I think the reason I bring it up is that so people can detach from the everyday, from all this chaotic energy,
mm-hmm.
and just look at it as, oh, there's that. There's that. There's that. Don't bring their wholeness into it and be so affected by it that you feel like then you have to go out and march. We're in this cycle that's going to happen regardless of those marches.
Right.
Those, you know, they're not going to really change much. It's a cycle. It's a cyclical thing that we all agreed to be here and to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we acknowledge that and do what we can to even, you know, choosing to give that homeless guy, whether or not you think he deserves it or not, a buck,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is,
right,
to do those small things.
That we can do.
Yeah, that we can do.
Gigi Belser can be found at GIGIBELSER.com. She will also be at the Well North Shore on May 20th, where you will learn a lot in person. So go ahead and hit the Well's website or mine, JenWeigel.com, or Gigi's, GigiBelser.com. Gigi, thanks for all the work you do.
Oh, Jen, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely. And continue to raise that vibration, everybody. Send the roses. Do your part. Don't judge others for doing theirs the way they are doing it. We're all doing the best we can in each moment. Stay spiritual, damn it. We'll talk to you next time.